Good morning. Today's Daf Ink Sufis is Chaf. We're on Yud Tes Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're going to be beginning this morning with the words Tanur Rabbanan. Tanur Rabbanan is about 8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Gemara is going to go on to the topic, continue with the topic of Kim Shtaros. So let's quickly recap. Let's review. Here we are in the second parak of the Masechta. And in the second parak of the Masechta, so briefly, we started off with the discussion of he said, she said, where there is claim, counterclaim between husband and wife regarding what exactly happened. She wasn't a Basula. An explanation is demanded in terms of why she wasn't a Basula. She gives one, he gives a counterclaim. And so this is obviously continuation of what we did in the first parak of the Masechta, where that for a good part of that first parak, so we went over cases of claim, counterclaim. So over here, second parak started off that way, but then it derailed. And the reason why it derailed is because Rabbi Yeshua says, here's the case where I'm going to agree. And in the Mishnah, the beginning of the second parak, so Rabbi Yeshua gives a case where I go over to a person and I say to him, look, this property over here that I currently own, so it happens to be, you didn't know this, but it belonged to your father, and I purchased it from him. And so this is going to be an example of a peshas or a pesheter. So a person can create a liability for himself, and once he does that, and so therefore he can extricate himself from that. And this is the idea of a pesha aser hu ha pesha hitter. So this concept in halacha has a number of applications, and the Gemara goes through here a number of different types of applications of this principle. Another application of this principle is what's called kiyum shtar. Kiyum shtar, when you have a document and you have witnesses signing on the document, so there is a security measure in which the witnesses have to authenticate their signature. So in order for the document to be a collectible document, so in order for the shtar to be a good shtar, you need witnesses who signed on the document to authenticate. Now, that's not the only way to authenticate a document. We've gone over this point already a couple of times since we started the topic of Kiyum Shtaros. Kiyum Shtaros can be accomplished in a number of different ways. But right now, we're focusing just simply on the witnesses themselves who signed on the document. So they have now an ability to authenticate the document. And until authentication, so the document now is not a locked and loaded document. Only after they authenticate, then and only then, is the document going to be good. So let's say they come forward, the witnesses come forward and say, look, Savia Denu, in other words, we signed on this document, that's our signatures, but at the time when we signed them, we were disqualified, we were Ketanim. So in all those circumstances, that's an example of a Pesha Aser, Hu Ha Pesha Iter. So in other words, with their testimony, they create Iser. Now Iser over here, the term we're going to be using a little bit lightly, Iser over here just simply means liability. So the mouth that created liability, i.e., they're the one that charged the document with its force, with its power, with its ability to collect. So also, so they can also now be believed and can be credible regarding testimony about the very same document, meaning that even though they signed it, they were not good witnesses when they signed it. So that's going to be an example of Peshitter. We are now starting with the words Tanur Rabbanan. It is towards the bottom of the Amud. We talked about the Edom testifying about themselves. Now the Braisa that we're about to start is going to give a similar scenario in which we do have witnesses who signed on the document. They're not here. And we have others testifying about their signature. Tanur Rabbanan, we start with the Braisa. Shtaim Chasum al-Mashah, you have two witnesses who signed on the document. Umesu. Now these two witnesses died. Ubau Shnayim. Another two witnesses come. Min Ashuk. We know it's their signature. So, this is going to be a second way in which a document can be authenticated, another method of Kiyum Shtar, and that is two other witnesses who are familiar with their signature, know their signature, and now coming to testify regarding their signature. So the Mishnah over here describes how now I have the second set of witnesses testifying about their signature, Aval. However, here's an important detail they're also adding, and that is Anusim Hayu. Kitanim Hayu, Psule Edus Hayu. At the time when they signed, they just simply were not Kasher Edim. They were either signing under duress, they were minors, or they were disqualified. So Hare Elu Ne'emanim. So here's going to be an example of a Pesha Aser or Pesha Iter. Now this is a little bit different than the case of our Mishnah. In the case of our Mishnah, it is the principal signers of the document who are coming and testifying and also discrediting. Over here, you have another set of witnesses who are coming and testifying and discrediting. The im yesh edim shiksav yadam, who's there, osha yaksav yadam, yotzi mimakamacher, mishar shikara lav ir urva hochsak bebezdin, ein elu nemanim. However, if these signatures have been authenticated from an external source, either from other Edim. Alternatively, from another document that's already been authenticated, and it's the very same signatures that have already been authenticated in another document. So under those circumstances now, these witnesses can no longer discredit it. Very intuitive. In other words, if they're not creating the liability, they cannot create the heter as well. Gemara's question. So Adkan Divrei HaBraisa, so that's the end of the Braisa. So this Braisa is echoing what we learned earlier, but really it's not just an echo, it's an additional point. And that is that authentication of a document and its disqualification is not just limited to the people who signed the document, but if it's being authenticated by others, their authentication can also lead to them to disqualify as well. Good. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. Now you're telling me that we have witnesses who signed on the document. We have a second set of witnesses who are authenticating and discrediting. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Trei utrei ninhu. So basically what we are at is a loggerhead. We're caught between two witnesses, meaning we have the witnesses who signed on the document, as we already discussed a number of times in a row, a number of days in a row. Witnesses who signed on the document are treated as edim. It's ke'ilu, it's as if that their testimony was submitted in court. And now it's true that you have another set of witnesses who are coming to discredit, but when all said and done, it's 2 versus 2. So in a case of 2 v 2, what is that called? That's called edos hamachisha zezeh. So they're just simply contradicting one another. And now what? And now you're going to be able to collect with this document? That's crazy. Meaning that I have competing witnesses and therefore we're at a stalemate. So Amar Rav Sheshi, the Gemara is going to give two answers in terms of exactly what to do now in this scenario. Meaning on one hand, we are extending credibility to the authenticators in which they're both authenticating and disqualifying, but at the same time, we can't ignore the fact that there were actual witnesses who signed on the original document. It's trei utrei. It's 2 versus 2. But the suggestion or the implication of the Braisa that now we're going to be able to collect with this document when all said and done, it's 2 v 2. Okay, so there are two approaches to this question. The Gemara starts off with the first approach. Amar Rav Sheshis. Zos Amaretz HaChashat Tchilas HaZamahi. So Rav Sheshis says, well, look, here's a statement. And that is that contradiction is really the beginning of Hazama. Okay, so just happens to be that this summer we are into Makkos, meaning we have a number of young men coming and learning in the community, and we're learning Makkos together. So happens to be that my head right now is in Makkos, but regardless, the statement over here of the Gemara that Hachash is the beginning of Hazama, it's an imprecise statement. In other words, we know that you can either contradict witnesses or you could be mazim them. To be mazim witnesses is now to come into court, a second set of witnesses, and say, regarding the first set of witnesses, Imanu Aisa Mamakum Ploni, there's no way they could testify regarding whatever case it is, whether it's a criminal case, a civil case, it doesn't matter. There's no way they could testify because they were with us at the time. And Chiddush HaTorah, we have a novel idea within Halacha, which is that we extend credibility to the second set of witnesses over the first set of witnesses. Good. That's the idea of Edim Zomimim. Now, Hachasha is just simply where we're contradicting over the facts of the case. So in the case of Hachasha, we don't know who to believe. In the case of Hazama, so we believe the second set over the first set. They're not exactly the same. And when Rav Sheshi says that Hachasha is the beginning of Hazama, it just simply means that they're not the same, but they're similar. In other words, that they do share some common denominators between the two. And notably, what are the common denominators that they share between the two? Kishem, a mazim asayidim ela bifneim, kach a machishim asayidim ela bifneim. So just like when it comes to Hazama cannot be done in abstentia, meaning that the only way that the second witnesses can be mazim the first witnesses is if the first witnesses are here. Then and only then are we going to apply the rule of Hazama. Similarly, when it comes to Achasha, the only way witnesses can be contradicted is if they're here. You cannot contradict witnesses in their absence. To which the Gemara says, what? Is that true? Is that accurate? So I'm Relay Rav Nachman. So Ilu Hava Kaman Machishin Lu Hava Achasha. Evelo Hava Mashgichin Bahu. The Havale Eidus Mecheshes. Hasha Delesnu De Ilu Hava Lekaman Dilma Hava Modelu. Mehemne? And Rav Nachman can't possibly understand. What are you trying to suggest over here? That because the witnesses now are not only signed, but they're late, meaning they passed away. meaning the so in their absence now, you can't contradict them. Meaning, just Rav Nachman's basically saying, let's think about this for a moment. Why in the world can you not contradict them? Let's say their absence makes it better than if they were here. Let's just for a moment theoretically say they're here. Now what's going to happen? So what's going to happen is one of two options. Either they're going to stand firm in their position. No, we signed on this document and everything we signed on is true and correct. Okay, so it just simply means that they're contradicting each other. The two sets are contradicting each other. And the other alternative could very well be that they're going to say, you know what, you're right. When we signed the document, we were psule edim, we were ketanim, we were anusim. So in a best case scenario, we're just going to end up at the point of achasha. In a worst case scenario, I could have the original edim coming and actually agreeing to what's being charged against them. So Rav Nachman says, I don't understand. How is their absence going to make this any better than just simply the case of edim amachishim? Okay. So Rav Nachman, this idea of Rav Sheshes, Rav Nachman just simply rejects. He dismisses it. Okay, so in Rav Nachman's dismissal of the idea, so once again, we're back at the Braisa and we're a little bit stuck. Let's reset the question. So what happened in the Braisa is that I had witness sign on the document, they passed away. I now have another set of witnesses who are coming here for the purposes of Kiyam Ashtar. They're authenticating the signatures. In their authentication of the signatures, they're also adding, oh, by the way, when they signed it, they weren't qualified to sign it. So the Braisa says, under those circumstances, the second set of witnesses now are going to be able to discredit the shtar. Why? Hapesh asur hu hapesh etter. Okay, that's what the Braisa said. The question, of course, is that, wait one second. The witnesses who signed on the document, so they might not be here, but their signatures are testimony. And so therefore, what do we have over here? We have the testimony of these signatures, and we have the new testimony of these people authenticating. So what do we have over here? Trey utrey. So it's two against two. And the Braisa makes it sound like we're going to go ahead and collect with this document. What are you talking about? We're going to collect with this document. The document over here has not been, it hasn't been validated, but at the same time, it hasn't been fully refuted. So what does that mean that we're now going to be able, apologies. I got that one wrong. In other words, we're not going to collect with the document, meaning we're going to disqualify the document. Okay. But that part I got wrong. But the part that's right is that when all said and done, ultimately it's two versus two. So why are we leaning in one direction over the other on this document? So Elam Rav Nachman, so the Gemara says, okay, so Rav Nachman is going to give what he believes is the correct answer. And that is Uki Trey, Lahade Trey, and Uki Mamon, and Becheskas Marye. So Rav Nachman says, so I'll tell you what we're going to do. In other words, we're basically we're going to look at the facts. The facts of the matter are, is that I have two witnesses, one is who signed on the document. I have another two witnesses who are coming and authenticating and discrediting. So now it's 2v2. And what do we have? What we normally have by Edom HaMachishim Zezeh. And that is that we are at an impasse, meaning we don't know if the document is a good document or not. And as far as the money's concerned, so uke mamona becheskas marye. So leave the money in the hands of the original owner. In other words, chazaka. The shtar itself is simply not going to be a determinant of who's entitled to the money. So wherever the money is, that's where it's going to be mochzek. Now Rashi over here does make a really interesting comment. Rashi writes over here, and what are we going to do with the actual document itself? Well, we're stuck, meaning the document now is between two witnesses, right? It's ke'ilu. It's as if the two sets of witnesses are pulling on the document in each direction. So in other words, the document itself is, on one hand, not disqualified, but not collectible. In other words, it's stuck in between these two witnesses. Rashi then also does make a comment that what's going to happen now is that if there is a tfisa, if one person now takes the money forcefully based on this document, so then the tfisa will be acknowledged. In other words, it'll be awarded to the person who was tofes. Okay, and that part of Rashi, truth of the matter is, really opens the door to a larger discussion about being tofes, about seizing based on a document that is somewhat questionable. Okay. We're going to go on, but the idea, however, is that if we're in a position of stuck between two sets of testimonies. So then what we're going to do is that we're just going to basically, we're going to hold. And as far as the money is concerned, okay, mamona becheskas maye. The Gemara says, I'll give you something which is comparable to this, and that's midi dehave nechse de barshacha. The Gemara gives us the case of barshacha. It happens to be that the case of barshacha is provided to us on a number of occasions in the Gemara. We saw it together back in Yevamos. And that is the following, the barshacha is avenechse. What happened was, is that barshacha, that's his name. Probably not his name, by the way, if I may guess. The word shacha is really more of an adjective than it is a noun. In other words, shacha from the word shota, he was mentally unstable. And that's going to be an important point, which we're going to clarify in just a moment. And that is that he sold the property. So, also betreva amri kishu shota zavin, also betreva amri kishu chalan zavin. And now, in terms of his mental state, so he goes in and out of mental sanity, insanity. So, in other words, I don't want to give psychological labels, and pretend like I know, but the point is, it's actually really straightforward, and that is that unfortunately, so sometimes he's mentally right, sometimes he's mentally not right, and so now we know the halacha. The halacha is that in order to affect a kinyan, so you have to be of a right state of mind. In other words, if you're mentally incompetent, so your kinyan is not going to be a kinyan. So over here, what state was he in when he actually made the sale? Okay, so they are deliberating over this very point. So two witnesses say that he was in a good state of mind when he sold. Two witnesses said that he was unstable. He was mentally unstable. I'm Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, okay, so what do you do under these circumstances? So the Gemara says, okay, so here's what we're going to do. And that is that I have competing witnesses one against the other, and hold. In other words, hold. The witnesses themselves now are pulling in two different directions. That's Edom HaMachishim Zedzeh. So now the witnesses no longer serve as any kind of determinant. So what is the determinant? The determinant is going to be Chazakah. It's going to be where was the property originally owned by? Was it originally owned by Barshacha? So he gets to keep it. V'lo amar el diyisle chazaka da'avase. Avalesle chazaka da'avase. Aminan kishu shota zavin, kishu shota zavin. So, and the Gemara makes just an important commentary over here. Just one thing to keep in mind. In order to call Barshacha the muchzak, that means that we have to know that the property actually was his. And that means to say, that the property actually was owned by his father and he inherited it. So that means that we know that Barshacha was the actual rightful original owner of the property. But in the circumstance where Barshacha himself purchased the property, so now we can go back to his purchase of the property, and now we can ask the same question. What was his state of mind when he purchased it? Was he mentally competent? Was he mentally incompetent? So under those circumstances, you can't call him the chazaka de mare, the original owner. The original owner title can only be really given to him if he in fact inherited the property. Or alternatively, if at the time when he purchased the property, we know definitively that he was mentally competent. Amr Rabbi Abahu. Okay, so we touched on just moments earlier this idea, as to whether or not you can contradict witnesses in their absence. So Rav Sheshes had, on the bottom of the previous Amud, at least an attempted position to state that you cannot contradict witnesses in their absence. Right? He says, just like Hazama, it cannot be done, by Achasha can't be done as well. And Rav Nachman pushed back on that, and now Rabbi Abahu. Rabbi Abahu is also going to push back on that as well. So Ein Mazim Esayidim Ela Bifneihem, Machishim Esayidim Shelo Bifneihem. So when it comes to Hazama can only be done directly in the face of the Edim Zomimim. So if you have the second set of witnesses who say, regarding the first set of witnesses, there is no way they could testify because they were with us at the time. So Imanu Hayisim Ab Makomploni. So that can only be effected only when they're directly here. The Edim Zomimim are still in our presence. But you can't do it in their absence. But when it comes to contradicting testimony, you can contradict testimony even if the original witnesses are not here. And the Gemara points out, and the Gemara says, and do you know that behind every Hazama is a Achasha? Okay. right, just the Gemara itself, this is going to be the clearest Gemara that indicates this idea, right? And we're just doing the Gemara Makos, so I'm filing through the Gemara right now. The Gemara Makos doesn't make the point as clearly as it does right here on the 20th daf of Ksuvos. And the idea is that behind every Hazama is really Hachasha, meaning that when you are Mazim Edim, so you say you were with us at the time, so there is a Chiddush HaTorah that with the Edim Zomimim, so we're going to believe the second over the first. And as far as what we're going to do to the first set of Edim, so you're going to do them Kasher Zamam Lasos Achiv. In other words, you're going to do what they ever conspired to be done to the defendant. Okay, that's the Parsha of Edim Zomimim. But even though in their absence, you can't do Hazama, but still, it's no worse than Hachasha, meaning by the second set of witnesses coming along and saying, you were with us at the time, effectively what you're saying is that there's no way they could testify, meaning their testimony has to be just simply invalid testimony. They weren't even there. So even though I can't apply all the Hazama rules in their absence, but it cannot be any worse than Hachasha. And so therefore, Rabbi Abahu says that even though Hazama cannot be done in their absence, but in their absence, it's still going to be viewed as a Chasha. Amar Mar. We're in Chaf Amar Alf. We are right in the middle of the Amud. And the Gemara now continues its discussion. We are going to go back to the Braisa. Amar Mar. Im Yesh Edim Shiksav Yadam. Who is that? Oshaya Ksav Yadam Yotzi Mimakam Acher. So the Mimakam Acher. Misha Shekar Olav Ir V'Huchzak Bebeistin. So if the Braisa told us that in other words, the witnesses signed on the document already passed away, we have a second set of witnesses, now we're coming and authenticating. If in addition to authenticating, they're also discrediting, so they're going to be believed. Then the Braisa said, what if authentication has already been done by a third party? I don't mean a third party, meaning another set of witnesses. Alternatively, another set of signatures that are the signatures that have already been authenticated. So the Braisa told us once the witnesses who signed on the document have already been authenticated. So now these witnesses can't discredit. And again, it makes a lot of sense. It's very simple. In other words, they're not the Pesha Aser, and therefore they can't be the Pesha Matir. So the Gemara says now, in terms of externally verifying these signatures, either another set of witnesses, alternatively, you're comparing them against another document. But the Braisa actually says, with clarity, another document with these signatures that survived a challenge, meaning that when it comes to the comp document that we're comparing it against, it must be that this comp document was actually challenged, went to Beis Din, and survived a challenge. That shows us that this comp document is, in fact, a legitimate document in that it survived a challenge. So, kara lav irer in, lo kara lav irer lo. And misayel le Rav Asi, and the Gemara says this actually supports that which Rav Asi taught us. Am Rav Asi, em mekayem misashtar ela, mishar shekara lav irer v'huchzak be'beis din. And exactly what Rav Asi says, that the only way that we're going to be able to use another document with the same signatures as a comparative, as a side-by-side comparison in order to verify and validate this document, is only if the comparison document is in fact been challenged and survived the challenge. Amri Naradai, now in the Yeshiva of Naradai, so they're even a little bit more machmir. Ein mekayem misashtar ela mishtei ksuvos. So in order to use a comparative document, you must use two comparative documents, meaning that you must have two other documents that have these signatures on it. Or two other sale documents. In other words, what the document is validating is not really that significant. Either they were signing on a ksuva or they were signing on a deed, on a title, whatever they were signing on. And let's say they were signing on a title. So, and the buyer has lived now on this property 3 years going unchecked, unchallenged, meaning that's a good title. So, and their signatures are good. So in the Yeshiva of Naradai, so you may use another document in order to compare side by side in order to validate and authenticate, but it has to be against two documents, not just one document. Amar Shimei Barashi Uviyotze Mitachas Yad Acher. of Miyad Atzmalo. Just another detail over here in side-by-side comparisons. The document that we're comparing it against has to be coming from some other party, meaning the one who wants to authenticate the document and now happens himself to have another document with the signatures on it, so that's not going to be good for side-by-side comparison. Again, it makes sense. It's intuitive. If he himself is procuring a second document with these signatures, obviously that could, right? Common sense would tell you it may be a little bit fishy. So Maishan Tachas Yad Atzma Delo Delma Ziyuf Mizayif. So Mitachas Yaday Acher Na Midama Azel Vichaza Asa Vizayif. So the Gemara says, but really, what's the difference? Meaning, if this person is really interested in forging signatures, so what difference does it make whether he himself owns that second document, the comp document, or somebody else was in the possession of the comp document? So the Gemara says, "Kulei ha'lo matzim mechavim." But the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the difference is. The difference is as follows. In other words, to go over to his friend's house, to see the signatures of these people, and then to have to go home and to copy it based on his memory, that's going to be difficult. And it's just, you're not going to be able to produce a good forgery. If, in fact, you have another document and now you want to make a side-by-side forgery, right, that's good. But to have the document by somebody else's place, to see it and then have to remember it, go home and to make a forgery, that's just going to be too challenging. Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara now has not finished the discussion, but we're going to put a little bookmark over here. And the Gemara now is going to move on in terms of giving testimony based on notes that you wrote. Tana Rabbanan, Kosev Adam Medusa Lashtar, Umeid Allah Afilu Achar Kamashanim. Okay. Doctors are certainly going to relate to this. Truth of the matter is, anyone who it needs to remember a lot of information is going to relate to this. And that is that people who take notes and then base their testimony, well, in this case, we're talking about testimony, but base their testimony based on the notes that were written. And is it, in fact, going to be valid? In other words, it's a really interesting question, just independent of anything that we're discussing right now, but can I go ahead and write myself a note to help me remember? And then my memory now is going to be assisted by the notes that I wrote. Is that called testimony? Meaning, can we call that testimony? Now, this part gets a little bit tricky. I will just spend a moment trying to navigate this part. Meaning, we have been spending the last number of days talking about witnesses signing on a document, and that is considered testimony. Okay, but as we already pointed out, the testimony of signatures on a document is basically just that. Meaning, all you're doing is you're testifying on the content of that document. But in terms of oral testimony in court, oral testimony in court must be oral. And not only must it be oral, it also has to be a predicate of the memory that you have of the events. Okay, now, we all know our memory is terribly imperfect, meaning our memory is needs an assist, all right, on a number of occasions. Okay, I can be very biographical now in terms of how I struggle with memory, but we all do, meaning it's something which is very human. And so the discussion over here in our Gemara is the following, and that is that in the event that you're going to give oral testimony in a courtroom, and in the event that you're using notes that you wrote as aids to help your memory, is that acceptable, yes or no? So, Tana Rabbanan, so this is what the Brice is talking about. And you can use these notes even for years down the road. So, Am Rav Huna v'husha zorcha mi'atzmo. So Rav Huna says, yes, but the notes have to help your memory. They have to stimulate your memory. Meaning what you can't do is you can't just simply have no recollection and just rely strictly on the notes. Okay, now this part gets obviously tricky because the only one who's going to know this as to whether or not it stimulated your memory or you're relying solely on the notes, the only one who's going to know this is you. So I struggle a little bit trying to understand how can this particular halacha, how can it be verified? How can it be validated? And the only one who's going to know this is you, the one who's giving the testimony. Okay, I struggle a little bit. Rav Yochanan Amar Afapi She'ein Zochro Mi'atzmo. Rav Yochanan is of the position that even if you have no memory, meaning all you have is your notes, but your notes are going to be sufficient, they'll be valid. Rabbi says, based on what we just learned regarding Rav Yochanan, let's say I have two witnesses who witnessed event, and one of them totally forgot what happened. So what you can have now is you can have one witness basically say to the other witness, don't you remember? In other words, let me help you remember the event. And assisting in remembering is perfectly okay. Meaning from Rav Yochanan, it actually goes even a little bit more than that. Meaning notes can be used not only to help you stimulate your memory, but even recreate the memory. In other words, provide for you the memory that you totally lost. And Rabbi's telling us that based on Rav Yochanan, so if I have two witnesses and one witness totally remembers, one witness does not remember, I can have the witness who remembers basically recreate the memory for the one who forgot. So Ibayilu Atzma Mai. Okay, so this Chiddush of Rabba, that one witness can really help the other witness re-remember. So is this going to be true regarding the litigant himself? Can the litigant himself also assist in stimulating the memory? So Rav Chil Chaviv Amar Afilu Atzma, Mar Brid Rav Ashi Amar Atzma Lo. So we have a machlokus amongst the Amoraim whether or not the litigant can stimulate. V'hilchasa Atzma Lo. And the Gemara's conclusion actually is pretty resounding. And that is that the memory of one witness can be stimulated by the other witness, but not by the litigant. And again, I would say for obvious reasons. And that is obviously the litigant is extraordinarily biased in this event. In other words, obviously, he wants the testimony to go in a certain direction. Testimony requires a certain amount of objectivity. Now, over here, we're in the very touchy area of stimulating a memory. And so you can only imagine that if the litigant is going to be able to help stimulate the memory, it's going to lose a certain amount of objectivity. Again, it's a very intuitive Gemara. As we now turn to the top of the Amud Beis, V'itzor ben Rabbanan Havai, Afilu Atzmo. Now, if he is a Talmud Chacham, so now he being whom? Meaning, right, when the Gemara uses pronouns, so what always becomes the tricky part is who is the pronoun making reference to? Okay, so if he's a Talmud Chacham, so then it's fine. Then you can have the litigant help him recreate his memory. The way Rashi understands it is that if the witness is a Talmud Chacham, and the witness being a Talmud Chacham, so that now means that we're going to be able to trust a little bit more that the only way he's going to be testifying is if his memory actually was stimulated. Meaning that whatever he's going to say is not going to be based on what is being fed to him by the litigant, but that actually it really did stimulate his memory. Okay. Rav Ashi had testimony that he knew for Rav Kahana. However many years later it was, so Rav Kahana needed this testimony. And he said to Rav Ashi, "Nu, do you remember Amar Leilo?" So Rav Ashi says, "No, I don't remember." So Valav Hachi Vahachihu Ava. And here now Rav Kahana is trying to push Rav Ashi. "Nu, remember this, remember that. Amar Leilo Yadana." And Rav Ashi says, "I don't remember." So Lasof Itke Rav Ashi Vasile. And then, a little bit later, Rav Ashi comes back to the courtroom, and Rav Ashi says, "I remember." So, Chazil Rav Kahana Dava Mechaseis, and he sees Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana is really uncomfortable. Just, like, dumbfounded. So, Amrle Misfar Zalachika Samichna, Anahu Derame, Nafshai Ba'atkare. And Rav Ashi says to Rav Kahana, "Well, all you did was stimulate my memory." Meaning, when you first started jarring my memory, so I literally had no recollection. I didn't remember at all. And then after some time, in other words, I tried my best to go ahead and grab that memory, capture that memory, and I got it. And so only when my memory was properly stimulated, so then I went into the courtroom. The whole point of the story over here is that Rav Kahana's memory was stimulated by the litigant. Rav Ashi was a principal, one of the principals in the case. And despite the fact that he was a litigant, Rav Kahana allowed Rav Ashi, other way around, Rav Ashi allowed Rav Kahana to stimulate his memory, even though Rav Kahana was a nogei b'davar, even though he was a litigant in this particular case. Why would you allow that? Meaning, we just said that you can't do that. The only one who can stimulate the memory is another witness, but not the litigant himself. But this supports what we learned right on the top of the Amud, and that it's Surba Mirabanan Hu, that in the case where the witness is a Talmid Chacham, so then he's going to be given extra Ne'amanus, and when he says that his memory was actually stimulated, even by the litigant, we're going to believe him. Okay. One more discussion for today. We are now on Chaf Amud Beis, and right, in my Gemara I have a period. Anyway, Tanan Hasam. We're going to learn a Mishnah together. This Mishnah over here has to do with Tumat Tahara. Mishnah has nothing to do with our discussion, but what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to use this Mishnah in terms of, is there a limit? Do we cap the amount of time that a person can remember something? Meaning, the history of memory. How long does your memory last for? A memory of something, an event that occurred 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago. How long can a memory last within the within a person? Okay, right, this is where the Gemara, right, modern psychology are literally dovetailing one with the other, right? This is one of the more exciting topics within the world of psychology, but the Gemara obviously is interested from it, not from a psychological standpoint, but from a halachic standpoint, meaning, so good, so now you have a testimony that you've been hanging on to for decades, so can you submit that testimony in court, and can we assume that the memory has not failed? So Tanan Hasam, so we're going to try to use a Mishnah, and that is Hatililuyos. Okay, so we're talking about mounds of dearth, Hakrovos Bein Le'ir Vein Le'derech. They are approximate either to the city or to the road. Echad chadoshos v'echad yishanos. Whether they're new, whether they're old. So, timmeos. So, they're tummy. Meaning we're assuming that these mounds are actually graves. And what happened was is that for reasons which we're going to try to give explanation for, meaning it's not the actual cemetery itself, but basically what happened was is that someone needed a makeshift cemetery. So, these mounds represent actual cemeteries. You walk on top of them, so you're going to become tummy. So the harichokos, chadashos taros. However, if they are not proximate, if they're far away, or if they are new, so then they're going to be tahor. So yishanos tameos, but if they're going to be old, they're going to be tummy. So ezu lekrova. So I'm sorry, ezu krova. So we said that if it's karov, it's going to be it's going to be tummy. So chamishim ama ezu yishana, ezu yishana shishim shana div rebi meir. So we're giving definitions approximate. We're giving definitions of old. We said that if it's karov leir, so then we assume somebody was buried there. Proximity over here is going to be defined by 50 amas in terms of presumably from the city limits, and in terms of old. So the meaning, even if it's far away. But if it's old, so then we are going to assume that it is, it's going to be a cemetery, 60 years. That's according to Reb Meir. And Reb Yehuda Amar Krova, Ein Krova Hemena. So, as far as approximate is concerned, meaning this is the closest mound to the town. So in other words, there's no linear measurement. It's just simply going to be, is there any mound that's actually closer? And as far as Yishana is concerned, Ein Adam Zochra, it goes beyond human memory. Meaning, nobody remembers why this mound is here. What is the origins of this mound? My ear, my derech. Now, in the Braisa, sorry, in the Mishnah, it said ear, it said derech. So, Elam, ear, mamish, derech, derech, mamish. Now, a city to be defined as a standard city and his road to be defined as a standard road. So, and misfeka, mimichaskin and tuma. So what are you saying over here? That we don't know if somebody was buried over there and it happens to be near a city and it happens to be near a road? Let's be machmer. The Gemara effectively says, what? V'amri Shlakish, the Gemara says, I don't understand. So, Ela Matsu Vitiaru Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, basically for any excuse is not the best word to describe it, but at least if we have some sort of plausible deniability, we have some sort of explanation. So in Eretz Yisrael, so the Chachamim were Matar. And so therefore, basically, if I don't know, we'll assume Tahara. So over here, it's near a city, it's near a road, and now it's a mound. And we're going to assume it's Tameh, meaning the Gemara says, I don't understand the Mishnah, really from its most fundamental level. Amar Rebbe Zera, ir smuch le beis hakvaras. And Derech, Derech Beis HaKvar. So the Gemara says, okay. So it means that it was close to a cemetery. City that was close to, the mound was close to a city that was proximate to a cemetery. And as far as the road is concerned, the road was leading to the cemetery. Now, Bishlam, Derech Beis HaKvar, Zimnan, Demisrami, Ben HaShmashos, and Umikru, Kavar Betel. So I understand if the road was leading to the cemetery, so I get it. Meaning, what happened? So here's probably what happened. We're recreating now the most probable explanation, and that is that they were walking to the cemetery. It was getting dark. They didn't want to find themselves in the cemetery at night, and so what they did is they buried Al HaDerech. Good. So then I understand that we find a mound, and we really don't know what it is, but because it's on the it's en route to a cemetery, so this is now going to be a plausible explanation. And the mound is therefore going to be a source of tuma. So ba'el iras mukhla beis akvaras. So kula beis akvaras azle. But when we have a city that's next to the beis akvaras, so I don't understand. Everyone goes to the beis akvaras. So I'm Rabbi Chanina mitoch shanashim kover sham nif leham umukishchin zro asayham. So basically, the Gemara explains like this: What happens is that rachmanis, when a woman miscarries or when a mukishchin loses a limb. So under those circumstances, so they want to bury there the remains. Ad chamishim ama azla ihi lechuda tfei dabra inish ba'adam the ulabesa kvaras azla. So the Gemara says, look, so basically these are circumstances in which they're going to go by themselves. They're not going to venture out that far by themselves. So in other words, anything more than 50 amas outside the city, they're not going to venture out by themselves. They're going to want to bury the miscarriage. They're going to want to bury the remains, but they don't have people going with them. So therefore, we're going to assume that if it's within 50 amas of the town, that far they'll go, they'll bury. And the same thing is regarding, the same thing can be said regarding the mukushkin as well. So, and if they have anybody, walking with them, so then they're going to make it all the way to the Beis HaKvar. So the Beis HaKvar, Dabri Inish Ba'ada, Ula Beis HaKvar, Sazla, Hilkach Tuma Beretz Yisrael, Ula Mechaskinen. Okay. And that's why in Eretz Yisrael, unless there is a really good explanation why there's Tuma there, we're going to assume that there's no Tuma there. Amar Rav Chisda. Now, again, all this is interesting. It's not relevant to our discussion, but now Rav Chisda is going to try to tie it back. So Amar Rav Chisda, Shmami Nami Rebbe Meir, So what do we see from Rabbi Meir? In other words, we have a mound, and it's more than 50 years of age. We're going to go over here 60 years of age. So people are going to remember 60 years. More than 60 years, people are not going to remember. Velohi, and the Gemara says no. That's a false comparison. So the Gemara says, look, when we're talking about remembering historical events in the town that, and events that may or may not impact or affect you, and you weren't assigned to be a witness over that. So over there, so you're not committed yourself. You weren't intent on remembering. And so therefore, that memory is going to fade, and we'll assume that 50 years, you'll be able to retain it. But after 50 years, we're not going to retain it. But if you're intent on remembering something, so that memory is going to remain in perpetuity. Kaven de Rami Aleh. I'm just rereading that last line. Afilu Tuvanami. So once you're intent on remembering something, so it could be even more than 50 years. There's not going to be any statute of limitation in terms of remembering something, especially when you were charged, when you had an objective of having to remember it. Adkan. Okay, we're gonna pause over here. Let's quickly recap our daf today. We start off with the brisa regarding once again this idea of the authentication of signatures on a document. And if, let's say, the actual signatures themselves are no longer with us, they passed away, so I can have other people go ahead and authenticate their signatures. And once they're authenticating, they can also disqualify. Again, a pesha asur, a pesha iter. In that regard, the Brisa says that if they come and they disqualify, so the document actually is going to be now disqualified. The Gemara really struggled with that because what are you doing now? In other words, you're believing the second set over the first set. These are Edom HaMachishim Zed Zed. They're contradicting one another. So over here, I'm believing one over the other. By Hazama, we believe one over the other. But over here, how does that work? How can you do that? The Gemara gave two answers to that question. Rav Sheshes, Rav Nachman. The Rav Nachman response is the one that the Gemara seems to accept. The Rav Sheshes, the Gemara does not seem to accept. And the idea of Rav Nachman is that, no, you're right. In other words, Eidem Achishim Zedzeh. So basically, we are at a stalemate in terms of whether the shtar is a good shtar or not. Is it collectible or not collectible? We literally don't know. We're not going to tear the shtar up, but at the same time, we're not going to collect with it. All right, so then, what are we going to do with the money? The money's going to stay. Becheskas Maye. The money will stay with whoever is currently holding the money. Chazaka. Chazaka will be the determinant in terms of who gets to hold the money. Okay, I touched on the Rashi. I really didn't get into it. Rashi says that the note holder has an ability to be toface. Okay, Rashi does say that. Anyway, the Gemara says this is no different than the case of Barshacha. Barshacha sold the property, and was he mentally competent? He goes in and out of mental competency. And so was he mentally competent at the time? We don't know. Witnesses say that he was. Witnesses say that he wasn't. Once again, those two witnesses now create a loggerhead. So the two forces, equal but opposite, create a net zero effect. And so therefore, what are we left with? Chazaka. Chazaka is going to be the determinant. Okay. So that was the opening of today's daf. Using other documents to go ahead and make side by side comparisons. That's another way to be Mekayim Shtar. So a couple of points over here that the Gemara highlighted today. Number one is that I can only use a comp document if it was challenged in another court and sustained the challenge in another court. Then this could be serving as a comp document. In Nahardai, they only allowed two comp documents to be used. And on top of that, the comp document has to be coming from another source. The comp document cannot be coming from the person who's trying to authenticate the document himself. Obviously, there's a concern of forgery. And finally, the last thing that one other point that we discussed on Chaf Aman Aleph, and that is going to be stimulating a memory. Can memory be stimulated by somebody else? So by your second witness, the answer is absolutely yes. Memory can be stimulated by the other witness. Can memory be stimulated by the litigant? Effectively, the answer is no. However, if the witness himself is a Talmud Chacham, so then there is a lenience, there is an allowance. And that took us to the Amud Beis. And in the Amud Beis, simple question and answer, I'll do this very short, is there going to be terms in terms of your memory, right? Your long-term memory, is there a term to your long-term memory? That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara had a Mishnah. The Mishnah described mounds where people were buried, where at least we are considering the fact that people are buried in those mounds, depending on the context, whether they were close to the city as opposed to far away from the city. Even if they were far away from the city, but no one has a memory as to what happened with those mounds, why those mounds were dug up. So basically, in the Mishnah, Reb Meir says that for 50 years, people can remember. Beyond that, people cannot remember. So there are terms to long-term memory. And the Gemara says, no, there's not. Because when we're talking about something that is incidental to you, so then there may be a term, there may be a 50-year term in terms of long-term memory. But if it's something that you are committed to memory, you're charged to remember, so then there's not going to be any terms for your long-term memory. Adkan.